Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Today's episode is brought to you by Whoop, the personalized digital fitness and health coach. John and Nathan Florence have both been using Whoop for over 3 years now to balance their training both in and out of the water. Now, Whoop is introducing the all-new Whoop 4.0, the latest, most advanced fitness wearable on the market. Monitor your recovery, sleep, training and health with personalized recommendations and coaching feedback with Whoop. Train smarter, recover faster, sleep better, and now feel healthier with Whoop. The all-new 4.0 is smaller, smarter, and designed with new biometric tracking, including skin temperature, blood oxygen, and more. The device also features an all-new smart alarm, designed to wake you up feeling refreshed and ready to take on the day. Plus, it was designed with anywhere technology, so you can wear it with their Whoop body sensor-enhanced technical garments. The all-new health monitor dashboard gives you a big picture look at your overall health. Monitor key metrics like heart rate, resting heart rate variability, skin temperature, and blood oxygen levels. Plus, see improvements and irregularities and vital signs over time. You can even export 30-day health trends to share with your coach, trainer, PT, PCP, or physician. The all-new waterproof device is free when you sign up for a Whoop 4.0 membership. For any members, if you have 6 months left of your membership on your account, you can upgrade now and get the 4.0 for free. And right now, Whoop is offering 15% off when you use the code BEACHGRIT at checkout. Go to Whoop, WHOOP.com, and enter BEACHGRIT at checkout to save 15%.
Hello, and welcome to Dirty Water, the compendium podcast of the antidepressant website Beach Grip. Today we have a new interviewer, a man with a naked skull, piggish eyes, and a sanctimonious voice, but who will, let's be frank here, electrify any interior with his everyman-woman appeal, and who towers professionally over me, Derek Riley, and Charlie Smith. His guest is Mr. Mason Barnes, a little-known surfer from North Carolina, but who has ridden a wave measured at over 100 feet. The mathematics are simple. Mason stands at 6'2", he's 5'5 and a crouch, and from crest to trough, the face of this wave measures 23 units of Mason's crouching height. 23 times 5'5 equals 126.5 feet. Wild. Now, please enjoy Dirty Water with Ben Mundy.
Awesome.
And yeah, I was thinking, so when I saw met you, it was in Peniche at the CT contest, and I was bit like yourself, getting quite a few coffees at that place. Nothing to do with the service staff or anything like that, but there was nothing much to do. And I saw you sort of mothing around. I was mothing around too, supposedly doing some video work there, but I saw you just hanging around for a few days. And I thought, who is this guy? Because you're a bit of a striking lad. You stand out in the crowd, I would say, Mason. But like, yeah, what were you doing there, mate? Why were you hanging out?
Yeah, so I had been in, before that, I had been in Nazare for 2 weeks up until that time. And yeah, it had been about a week after that big swell we had. And a lot of my friends were in town because of the contest. So I just wanted to, you know, get out of Nazare, see some people my age and just kind of, yeah, I don't know, stay up past 9 o'clock for a little bit of a change. Yeah. Yeah, I went up there and just hung out. It was really nice. So.
You don't sort of meant, you know, when people talk about Nazare, obviously it's always focused on the waves and we'll get to that bit. You've caught a couple of waves out there recently worth talking about. But yeah, it's a funny little town, isn't it? To hang out full on, it's as you say, it's got a different vibe to most places. People don't sort of understand that you got to knuckle down there, don't you? Like just surf and pretty much that's all there is to do, right?
Exactly. I mean, I love it because that's more my like cup of tea. Is I'm you know, I don't like staying up late. I just hang and surf and super chill. So, you know, for day to day, it's somewhere I really enjoy to be. But then, there's, you know, there's not much going on. It's a beautiful old town, fishing village. And yeah, the new community there is, you know, that's something new that's kind of recently changed because of the surf scene. And it is still changing. Every time I actually go back to Nazaré, there's more and more people showing up. So it's pretty interesting to see. But for the most part, it's a pretty quiet place. Yeah. And that is kind of why I like it a lot. So,
and in Peniche, because obviously you were in the Ultimate Surfer last mm-hmm. year. So we'll probably get to that as well. But I mean, it was possibility that you could have had a CT spot, like if you got the wild card, that Peniche event, rather than just hanging around the event sort of in it. Was that something that crossed your mind, or was that something that you would like, if you could choose the two pathways, is that something, a sliding doors moment?
That actually didn't even like register in my head in any way, shape or form. I didn't even realize it, but now that it makes sense, it's like, yeah, that actually, it would have been an event I would have been in because Tia was there. So
would you swap the path you're on right now for that, if you could? I mean, hypothetically speaking, if you could just be that CT kind of surf star as opposed to your path you're on now, does that appeal?
No, I don't think so at all. This has been a path that I've been like working on for a really long time now, and it's finally, you know, paying off, and I'm starting to see the results that I want to see. And I'm very lucky to be doing what I do, because, you know, I have a very open schedule. I get to do what I want to do when I want to do, and just kind of be smart and, you know, make my own choices. And it's a very cool dynamic, because it's way different than like your CT guys. Those guys, you know, they're not in Europe anymore. They're now in Oz getting ready for the next event. And, you know, I'm still in France and just surfing and having fun every day, kind of training and waiting for, you know, another major swell to pop up.
Yeah, well, I saw Kelly on the last night in Peniche. We hung around for a few days, and there's some great ways. I saw him get some great barrels, but then we went to the local fish restaurant, and he was in there uh-huh. with his partner, and we were there as well. And I was just like, man, he's been doing that for 30 years. Like, that's a good crazy old scene in Peniche. You know what I mean? Like, he was still there, just going to the local fish restaurant, surfing the local waves. And I was like, takes a fair amount of ability to, you know, sort of repetition almost, where you can just do the same thing over and over. It's not no easy task.
No, exactly. And Kelly's another breed. He's there will never be another guy like him in this world. It's unbelievable what he's done.
And you talk about how you've sort of been working hard to get where you are, but it seems for me, as I said, I hadn't met you before, and I'd sort of been following a little bits about you, sort of underground mm-hmm. in many ways, but then you've kind of blown up in some respects over the last sort of 3 months. And I suppose that's because of those, from outwardly, those two waves that you sort of rode, and that got a bit of publicity. We'll talk about that first one in Nazaré, and just mm-hmm. I mean, it just, that wave just looks amazing, isn't it? I mean, how important is seeing that angle from the water, and I think the footage of, was it Laurent Pujol's? It's just blows you apart. You know, I mean, it was a massive, massive wave, but how great is to see it from the side angle?
Yeah, I think it's a really unique angle, because it's the most true angle you could see of a wave. A lot of these angles in Nazaré are way from above, from, you know, super far away, and you can't actually tell how big the waves are. They look like they're 200 feet, but people are always discrediting it, like, oh, the angle, it doesn't look like, you know, it could be big, but it might not be at the same time. And the cool thing about this angle is it's, you know, it's right there. You see the bottom of the wave, and you see the top and the spray coming off, and it's just such an unreal shot. And Laurent was in such a perfect spot to kind of capture the whole dynamic of what was going on. And it was just, I think, a lot of like stars aligned to make that one clip happen. And I'm so thankful Laurent was there, because I still haven't even seen a land angle of my wave, because it was late in the afternoon, and the sun in Nazaré late in the afternoon is super, super harsh. So, yeah, if he wasn't there, then I don't even know if I would have a clip of that wave. And yeah, it's just all the stars aligned. You know, there was no waves in the foreground. And yeah, those guys, where they are sitting to get that shot is so gnarly. Like, people don't understand. I kicked out pretty much right next to them, and I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here, like, as quick as possible. And they're just sitting there chilling, you know, waiting for someone to get another wave. It's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a freak, isn't he? Like, I think we went down, I was just lucky enough to be down Nazare when, like, Shane Dorian and the crew first paddled it. Like, well, what, not first paddled it, but it was one of the first times
yeah.
it was exposed. And yeah, Lauren mm-hmm. was there then, and some of the photo, he swam some of it, and then he was on the ski for others. So he's just got so much skill in getting in that spot. But I suppose that's the question. Yeah. A big wave surfer catches a wave and it doesn't get filmed. Does it really exist? Because
exactly.
That could have been. Because I was thinking that about your other one, that your wave, anyone seen the outer reef wave that you nabbed? And that was just shot, which is also, so it took your breath away when you first saw it. Because again, it's that perfect angle, but that was just an iPhone shot, wasn't it? Like,
yeah. So that is another, like, you know, a super lucky scenario for me. The jet ski safety I had hired for that day, Colin, he's a lifeguard in Hawaii, and he was just sitting in the channel. I had just gotten in the lineup, and he saw that wave coming, and luckily, like, just whipped his phone out and filmed it somehow perfectly. And if he didn't film that clip with the iPhone, I only would have a drone clip of that wave, and you can't tell, like, how big waves are with drones. So I got super lucky. And you know, usually I would have, you know, gotten someone out there on a ski and, you know, put a little more effort into having someone filming, but I didn't think much about that day. I was like, oh, it's going to be another like 12 foot outer reef, you know, super fun waves, but nothing really anyone's going to care to watch. So sure enough, though, that wave came in like immediately. I had only been in the lineup for like 5 minutes and that wave popped up.
It was so steep. Like, when you see you paddling, it just looks like, it looks like it's a, you know, you sort of can't believe your eyes. It sort of starts off like a normal looking wave, and all of a sudden then you appear and you look tiny. It's like a giant chope or something from an eye. Did you sort of know the scale of it when you started paddling?
When it came in, it looked crazy. Like, it looked even bigger than it looks in video. It was one of those waves I was like, I almost, like, you know, I was thinking about going. I was like, this thing looks very terrifying. And it was super stretched out and had a super big double up in it. So it looked like it was going to do what it did. And that's an intimidating thing, is like pulling into a big barrel. That's probably the scariest thing, at least in my opinion, in surfing. And luckily I had been surfing that wave for years now, and I knew exactly where to sit. There's a boil that I line up with, and I was right there on that little knuckle, and it was the perfect spot to just kind of let me in. Cause I was kind of on a small board too. So, you know, it was the stars aligned for that wave as well. And
wow. I mean, yeah, stars aligning is one thing, but taking off and packing these massive waves is another. And
so yeah,
you make your own luck in this world. But how's it sort of been since those waves? Have you noticed just a bit of more interest in your profile? Has things changed, or is it just been a sort of steady progression?
No, for sure. Things are obviously really busy for me right now, mainly because that wave in Nazare. I mean, Nazare is such an interesting place because there's so many eyes on it. People from, you know, outside the surf industry are so interested in what goes on there because it's such a beautiful, like, surreal place. And I've been nonstop busy for a month now since that wave, and just interviews and a handful of podcasts, and, you know, everywhere I go, people are asking me about the wave, and it's just really cool. And to see support from, you know, something like that. And, you know, I love this feeling. So
are you getting sick of telling the same story though? You're starting to, you know, I know with my stories, I start to make stuff up pretty quickly, start to, you know, like, start to, like, add little bits and exaggerate little bits. And then somehow they get woven into my story and then they get stuck. I don't know.
Each story has a different little twist to it, but you know, that is what it is.
yeah, you got the footage, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
cool. Well, let's go back to the start. I'll get a bit, people might not know so much about you. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Like you said, obviously, well, not obviously, but you grew up in North Carolina. So tell us about that, mate. What was the scene back home? What did your parents do? And do you have brothers and sisters? What was your sort of setup when you were younger at home?
I was born and raised in Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina. And, that's still like my favorite place in the world. It's home. It's where my mom, my dad, my sister are. And it's just such a beautiful place, such a cool little surf community. The waves are mad, but it's just, fun day-to-day waves. And my dad was a pro skateboarder when I was growing up.
Oh, really?
Yep. And then he now owns a company called Eastern Skateboard Supply. And it's a skateboard distribution company that sells skateboards, around the world. So I kind of grew up in the skate industry. That was, my life as a kid was following him to trade shows and contests and skate shops. And, my whole life as a kid revolved around skateboarding.
And you were
pretty unique.
Obviously skated yourself, did you? Were you into it?
Yeah, I love skating. I skated way before I surfed, I started skating, my dad had me on a skateboard as early as possible and I fell in love with it. And I didn't start heavily surfing until maybe like 15 or 14 when I started surfing more than skateboarding. And yeah, it kind of just took over. I enjoyed surfing more and, it seemed like more up my alley. And then from then on out, I started competing and it just kind of slowly took over and the skateboarding kind of went this way and surfing went this way. And I still love skating. Like it's still a huge part of my life, but,
My
mom worked, at the company with my dad for years. So like pretty much everything revolved around this company when I was growing up and, it's still going strong. It's called Eastern Skateboard Supply and, I'll probably be there one day doing what my dad's doing now. So until then, yeah.
And was there any sort of, not pressure, but was there, to join the, often with those, when your old man's got a business, there's a bit of pressure to join the company. Was there ever that sort of, or expectation that you would sort of just join the family business and pull your weight?
Yeah. Yeah. No, he definitely wants me to be more affiliated with the business than I am now. And I also do as well. But he's like so supportive of what I do and understands that, I have goals as a human, individually that I want to achieve. And then that will come after. And, obviously, that company is a part of my family, a part of my life, and I want to be a huge part of it as well. And I'm just kind of waiting for the right time, right place to like give it my all and, put as much time and effort as it needs, when it needs it. So.
Yeah. All right. There's a job there waiting. Stop catching 100-foot waves, mate. Your old man will be thinking, geez, if he stops catching 100-foot waves, he'll be back in the office quicker.
He obviously supports what I do and loves watching, me succeed and do what I love, but it scares him and he doesn't enjoy watching me do dangerous things like that. He would probably prefer me just home, family time, family business and living that life. But, that life isn't what's going to make me happy right now. And that's not what I want to do. And he's totally understanding of that. So.
Cool. And is that how you sort of spent a lot of time in Hawaii when you were sort of growing up? Did your folks go out there for holidays or how did you end up sort of hanging out in Hawaii so much?
Yes. So he actually, he's obviously loved surfing as well. He has my whole life. And he got this house on the North Shore of Oahu when I was probably 12 or 13. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but even before that, we had been going out there every single year. And, that's kind of my second home. He's got so many close friends there and I've had friends there since then, since I was 10 years old, some of my longest friends have lived there. And that's, that house has really helped change my life and put me where I am because I'm able to go there every year and surf in those waves without having to worry about, a place to stay. And which makes a huge difference, especially over there on the North Shore of Oahu. And
And who do you sort of, when you were sort of teenagers, kids going to the family home or the holiday house, whatever you call it, what sort of mates did you make around your age then? Was there a local crew that you made friends with then?
A lot of for many years, a lot of my friends from East Coast would come out and stay with me. Mm-hmm. I'd say one of the first people I met when I was super young was Ko Rothman, and he's one of my best friends today. I met him when we were, we must have been like 10 or 11. We were super young. Our dads are friends. And yeah, we met at a barbecue, and then the rest is history. Now he's one of my best mates, and we kind of travel the world together. So,
well, mate, where's your vlog, Mason? I mean, you gotta have a vlog, mate. You gotta have a vlog, surely.
He that's his thing. He's got the vlog thing taken care of, you know, more than I could ever imagine. He's done so well with This Is Lemon. It's pretty cool to see like what he's created. You know, people actually almost ask me more about This Is Living than anything that I've done. Like, I go somewhere and people are like, oh, This Is Living. People love it. It's pretty cool to see like what he's created, and like the support he has around the world's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's done so well. It's incredible. It's so watchable, isn't it? Yeah. You just want to hang out with him, and the closest you can get, unlike yourself, is watching him. So
yeah.
And is that where you sort of bit of full circle? Is that where you sort of met Garrett and Twiggy as well? Because I know they've been pretty influential. Is that right?
Yep. My dad and Garrett were best friends. I'm not even sure exactly how they met, but they've been best friends for a really long time. And Garrett was, you know, the one who introduced me to big wave surfing, me and my dad, actually. There's a day we went to this outer reef near Garrett's house, and he towed me and my dad in some waves. It wasn't anything massive, but at the time I was like, whoa, this is the craziest thing ever. And that was like my introduction to surfing big waves. That's like literally the day I fell in love with it. I'll never forget it. So, you know, I owe Garrett kind of all of that for showing me. And it's pretty cool. Garrett's such a giving person. He just wants to share the love of the sport, that adrenaline rush, and like, you know, that feeling that he gets with everyone else. And, you know, I've seen him do that with many people, and he did that with me and my dad that day, and it changed my life. So,
and then it's kind of weird to think all those years later to be back at Nazare, where you're sort of carrying on that tradition that he started. Like, it's, I mean, the surfing world is relatively small, isn't it? But it's still a pretty cool loop.
Yeah, it is surreal. You know, in October 2020, there was like a very big swell in Nazare. And luckily, I was already in Europe, and I flew down because Garrett was there, and he has everything so dialed there. And luckily, he took me under his wing, and was like, I didn't have to worry about equipment, safety, or anything, like, which is one of the, you know, biggest factors there. And because of that, he got me, you know, at the time, the craziest wave of my life, that swell. And that wave, I think, actually changed my career. That was my first, like, big push in the big wave world. And it really, you know, made an impact around my name, because it was a pretty unreal wave. And, you know, still, I'm still thinking that wave might even be bigger than this left. And there's no telling. There's no way to ever tell, because it's not a water angle. But I just know what it felt like. And
that was the right,
very scary ride. Yeah.
That looked bumpy as well.
Super bumpy, like going way too fast. And I'm lucky I didn't fall. So
exactly. It's so hard to tell the waves. It's weird science, isn't it? But as you say, if you had that water footage of that right hander, you might be saying something different.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose that wave, that probably helped you with your bit getting into the ultimate surf as well. Was that, I mean, how did that come
that
about?
Actually happened after I'd already been casted for the ultimate surfer, and I want to say I'd already filmed filmed the ultimate surfer, but then that happened in between filming and releasing the show, which was really cool. So
it's just been announced, it's been cancelled, that show, isn't it, unfortunately? But how do you look back at it now? I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, people have their views on it, but what's your take on it now that you know that it's sort of was a one-off almost?
I mean, in my opinion, it was an amazing experience. I had nothing to lose doing something along those lines, because at the end of the day, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't one of those ridiculous reality TV shows that people put on TV. Like, it wasn't, they had to make it a little bit out there just because, you know, television purposes, but it, you know, they let me be who I wanted to be the entire time. And I got to surf a perfect wave pool every day for a month. So yeah, it, I mean, it was, from people that are just watching the show, they might be like, oh, well, that's so lame. But it, in my experience, it was amazing. The crew that I worked with were amazing. There's people I still talk to. And, you know, I got to hang with some of my best friends for a month at the Surf Ranch, got paid to be there. Like, it was, you know, it was an unreal experience. So I would 100% do it again if they asked me.
Wow. You have to get another one. What and how'd your surfing improve? Surfing that wave just endlessly for a month, that must affect your surfing somehow. Did it improve? Or
yeah, kind of. It was like very nerve-wracking experience from a surfing standpoint, because we didn't get to actually have much practice. We'd have like one wave of practice, and then when it was time to compete, you would have your one wave, and if you fall, then like that's your score. So I didn't honestly get to surf like exactly how I wanted to surf the entire show, just because the nerves were like nothing I'd ever felt in my life. Like surfing in that pool is already nerve-wracking, you know, when just on a fun day, because you don't want to mess the wave up. You see this thing coming, you just don't want to fall. But then with a jersey on and all that pressure, and you know, if you fall, you're probably losing. It's just like so much going on. And I didn't really get to open up and like surf exactly how I wanted to surf, but it definitely, you know, I definitely learned a lot from a competitive standpoint, because now, like, if I do another contest, it's probably not going to feel nearly as nerve-wracking as that, because it'll be in the ocean and I'll have multiple waves to try and not, you know, have to worry about falling. So,
and it must have been good for the old Instagram following, surely, mate. Sure. Yeah, the most important metric. You must
have. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a key nowadays. You know, for a while, I'd say as an athlete, it wasn't like that important. It's like, okay, you're good at a sport, you don't need to do this internet social media thing, but it's kind of part of the business now. And it's obviously a perk if you have a lot of followers. And yeah, it definitely helped there. So,
yeah. Well, you got your rig out too, mate. So that was, you know, that's that always helped.
Yeah.
Anyway. And now, mate, we're going to sort of start to wrap it up, but what's on now? You've just done sort of, you've been in Europe a long time and,
yeah,
you scored some waves in France, did you? And what's on for the rest of the year? What Mason Barnes is, what's so, the big plan? What's
that is a good question. Goal? I'm still in Hosgor. The way has been so fun here for the past week. I'm going to Portugal tomorrow actually to shoot with Ruka for a week in Algarve, which I'm super excited about. Wicked. And then I don't know if I'm supposed to say that or not. And then I have to go to Paris for a couple days for a shoot, and then going to probably come back here.
And are these shoots, are they sort of other brands or modeling shoots, or what? You got a sideline? What's your side sort of? Like, yeah, come on, mate. You just don't go to Paris for shoots. Yeah, I do. What's going on?
Yeah, no, I can't say what it is yet, but it's definitely one of the biggest opportunities I've ever had. So yeah. I'm super excited for, you know, that to come out and be able to tell what it is. Cause yeah, you know, a big goal of mine has always been to bridge the gap of the surfing world and that kind of outside world and work with companies outside the surf industry. And you know, Europe's obviously a really good place for that, because, you know, most of these companies come from over here. And, you know, I've been trying to capitalize on being over here and you know, doing these jobs, because I've kind of just been sitting here, you know, the job is done in Nazaré and now I'm in France just kind of hanging. So I'm just trying to stay busy while I can.
Yeah. Well, sounds good, mate. Well, yeah, hopefully yeah. When it comes out, you can tell us, we'll check back in and see what the big gig
thank
was.
You. Kind of thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
all right, mate. Well, I appreciate your time and you know what, you're sort of on a roll. So long may it continue. I know you've worked hard to get there. It's not a,
thank you.
Sudden thing, but yeah, mate. Thanks again, and let's see what happens next. I can't wait.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out and doing this. It was cool.
All right, mate.
Thank you for the support.
Anytime. All right, yeah. Mate. Cool. All right, that's a wrap. So
perfect.
Too easy, brother.
Yeah. If you need anything else,
yeah, just, no worries. I think yeah, I'll just package up, send it straight on. So I'll let you know what. Yeah, how it's coming out and when it's coming out and where it's coming out and all that sort of stuff. But it should be pretty straightforward.
Perfect. Perfect.
Cool. Yeah, I'm down in yeah, we're going to Lisbon on Monday. There's like a QS down there. But
oh yeah. We might come up for a little bit. I'll be in Algarve. So I'm not sure how far that is.
But yeah, it's a couple of hours. Mate, we're at Caparica, which is on that first week on the south side of Lisbon. But
yeah,
along that stretch, there's some of the coolest little bars, like Caparica itself, no is a bit of a shitty little, not shitty, but like a surf sort of town, a bit rough and ready.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A mile down the beach,
there's a
wicked, like all run by the Frenchies, like sort of like Ibiza style fucking bars and stuff.
No way.
Fucking cool, as
sick. Yeah.
Anyway.
Sick.
Like the QS, mate.
Well, yeah, if I'm there, let's link up.
Hit me up, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, mate.
100%.
Have a good one. Thanks for your time.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.